தம்ம சர்மன் பேஸ்ட் ஆன் தனிய சுத்து. தனிய சுத்த இஸ் ஆக்சுவலி அவைலபிள் இன் சுத்தனி பாத்து. சுத்தனி பாத்த இஸ் ஒன் ஆஃப் த புக்ஸ் அவைலபிள் இன் புத்த கணிக்காய. தே ஆர் சர்டன் ஷார்ட் டிஸ்கோர்சஸ் ஆர் கலெக்டட் டுகெதர். அண்ட் சுத்தனி பாத்த ஸ்பெஷலி வெரி இன்ட்ரெஸ்டிங் பிகாஸ் மோஸ்ட் ஆஃப் த ஒத்தென்டிக் டீச்சிங்ஸ் ஆர் தே ஆர் அண்ட் மோஸ்ட் ஆஃப் த வெரி ஏர்லி புத்திஸ்ட் டீச்சிங்ஸ் ஆர் ஃபேர்லி collected there, and very interesting suttas that most of us are quite familiar with, say Karaniyametta Sutta, Pasala Sutta, and then Ratana Sutta, Mangala Sutta. All these very popular suttas are available in this Suttanipata, and they later extracted towards the Pirit Pota and all these things, and actually the original source is this Suttanipata. And Dhaniya Sutta is very interesting situation where one of the what you call herdsman called Dhaniya, who is now staying a river bank called Mahi, and there he is actually mentioning about his success, in a way his financial economical success, because in the good old India, the and even today, there are a large majority of people who are maintaining a large crowd of herd of animals, cows. And here Dhaniya actually had around 30,000 ox and 30,000 cows. So basically that's a large number. So that indicates his wealth. That indicates his richness. And there are typical behavior is during the rainy season they stop wandering. What they do is they find out a very safe place where water is available, but at the same time not being affected by the flood, and they build the huts for their own living as well as for the cows to safely live. And because the rainy season is quite strong, and they want to basically cover the rainy season safely. Now at this instance, Dhaniya actually was doing that, and he actually has found what you call Mahi, the river called Mahi, and there he and his group actually have built many places, many dwelling places. And they are living there. And at the same time, there are some safe places prepared for the cows and bulls. And again, the huts are properly sheltered. Again, all the cows are milked, and enough water and everything is available. Fire is also available. So now he is basically in a very safe, comfortable situation. Now with that, actually Dhaniya get a some sort of a happiness, what we sometimes call as Atti Sukha, Bhoga Sukha, Anana Sukha. So these are the type of happiness that Buddha explained a successful householder can experience. When he feel that I have something, I have wealth, I have worked hard, so as a result of that, I am able to accumulate fair amount of wealth. So with that, he get some sort of happiness. And on the other hand, he is not in debt to anyone. So he is a free person. So not in debt. So that also makes him happy. And on the other hand, he has enough food to eat, and his wife, children and everything is quite well. So therefore the Bhoga Sukha is also there. So likewise, this Dhaniya is quite happy about his present situation. Therefore, he is now making a very interesting verse mentioning about his success. And now it is about to rain, and so he kind of make a challenge to the rain, telling now I am doing well and everything's done, everything's well. So if you want, you can rain. So this is a kind of a very interesting dialogue that going through. And anyway, this Dhaniya's verse being heard by the Buddha from far away place, and Buddha understood this person, Dhaniya, and his wife actually have the potential to become arahants. On the other hand, if they stay like this for a long time, know soon that they'll be subjected to flooding and ultimately they all get killed. So therefore, Buddha intervened, and when Dhaniya is uttering these exclamations about his success, Buddha go from the sky and he give a kind of a answer to Dhaniya more from the spiritual perspective. Dhaniya is talking from the economic point of view, the mundane life, the household life, and Buddha talks about the spiritual life. So therefore, this is a very interesting conversation. Dhaniya is speaking the success of economy, success of family life, household life, and Buddha talks about the success of spiritual life. And as we discussed last time, even though some people are spending luxurious household life, they still sometimes have the potential to get enlightened, potential to lead a spiritual life. So that the seed of enlightenment, seed of spirituality are available in certain people. So when Buddha preaching this Dhamma to Dhaniya, so that actually has triggered that potential in Dhaniya. And not only in Dhaniya, even his wife had the potential. So Buddha's teaching, the way Buddha prescribed, the way Buddha described his teaching is quite interesting. And Dhaniya and his wife was listening to the Buddha's answers. And they actually got really interested, inspired by the Buddha's teaching. Now we have come to the level of number 28, or actually we have spent around 10 verses so far. Now we can go to the 11th sermon, 11th verse. So here Dhani is telling like this: Kila nikata asampavedi dama munjamaya nava susanthana nahi sakhinti Dhenu papi chetum atache patteyasi pavassa deva. Now you can understand that they are the agricultural setup. They are maintaining a large amount of cattle, herd, cows, bulls, and in order to properly save them, protect them, guard them, so they are using stakes. Those are properly planted on the ground, and now cattle, herd, bulls and cows are all bound to those strong stakes, and therefore they can't wander. So everyone is properly put together, and now is in a pretty good situation. And again, the rope, nowadays we are using ropes, but in those days they are using a kind of grass called munja grass. So using which actually they have prepared the ropes, and those are being used to bind the cattle, then the cows and the bulls to those stakes. And those are pretty strong and they are well done. So Dhani is explaining, they are proper situation. The stakes are planted and they are unshakable. And again, the ropes are quite strong and they are well shaped, they are new, and not even the sucklings can break them, because sometimes when the calves are quite hungry, they may even break and go towards the cows, but they even can't break them because that is so strong. So therefore, all the cattle, then the bulls, cows are well safe. Therefore, if you like, you can pray. So this is the kind of the verse that Dhani is telling. Now Buddha give an answer. Usaboriva chetva bandhanani nago puti latangva dalayitva nahang puna uppesang gabbaseyang atache pattesi pavasadeva. Now interesting points are highlighted here. Now Dhaniya is actually explaining how the bonds are being done, and his bonds are quite strong. So bulls, cows, they can't go out of it because the bonds are pretty strong. Now Buddha mentioned how he has broken the bonds, how he has cut through the bonds. you can recognize how Buddha is putting the spiritual perspective into the picture. Dhammi is talking about the strength of the bonds. Buddha is talking how he has cut off the bonds, cut through the bonds, broken the bonds. Like a bull, I have cut through the bonds. And again, like an elephant, he has sundered the rotten creeper. Now, different creepers are there. They could be strong, but Buddha completely destroyed those creepers. The creeper is a synonym for tanha. Tanha lata. Tanha is a female term, and the creepers, craving, is completely sundered, completely removed. And again, nāhaṁ kuna upessaṁ gabbaseyaṁ. So Buddha mentioned that he will never come again to this world. He will never come to the human birth again. And he put it very beautifully here, I will never again come to the bed of the womb. Now we all as human beings born in mother's womb. And that is what we call as gabbaseyaṁ. And probably when I am telling this word, gabbaseyaṁ, probably you can remember in Karaniya Metta Sutta, that's a beautiful verse coming in Karaniya Metta Sutta, Vittincha Anupagamma Silava Dassanena Sampanna, Kamesu Vinaya Gedham Nahijatu Gabbaseyaṁ Punareti. So this is a very familiar verse coming at the end of the Metta Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta. Where Buddha mentioned this particular practitioner who is practicing metta, practicing vipassana. So he is now with proper understanding, and as a result of that, and he has the proper wisdom, and he completely abandoned the craving for the sense pleasures. As a result of that, nahi jatu gabbaseyam punareti. So he may not get the bed of the womb again. The same word is here also in this Dhaniya Sutta. So Buddha mentioned here, I will never come again to the bed of the womb. Nāhaṁ puna upessaṁ gabbaseyaṁ. So when Dhani is mentioning about the sucklings, that they are even not capable of breaking the bonds, now Buddha mentioned, I will never come to the bed of the womb again. So that is my last birth. So therefore Buddha is giving some deeper meaning to the answer by telling these strong words. So actually this actually now causing Dhaniya to think, causing Dhaniya's wife to think. When they are satisfied with their economic success, financial situation, or their wealth, social status, when Buddha is talking kind of spiritual, so these two people having a lot of potential start to think in that angle, think aligned with the Buddha's teaching. This is a very interesting phenomena, as even last time we discussed. So there are many people, even though they are living luxurious household life sometimes, so when they hear Buddha's teaching, so their way of thinking, their attitudes get aligned with the Buddha's teaching. There are seeds of enlightenment, seeds of spirituality getting triggered. And the same thing has happened here to Dhaniya and his wife. And now, when Dhaniya and his wife is likewise have developed faith with the Buddha, now all of a sudden the rain starts to pour. Ninnancha thalancha purayanto maha mego pavassi tavadeva. Sutva devasya vasato ima mattang dhaniyo abasata. Filling the lowland and the highland, at once a great cloud poured down rain. Having heard the rain falling, Dhaniya spoke about this matter. Now Dhaniya is challenging that I am fine, you can rain. Now the rain happens. It's a heavy rain, and at this moment now Dhaniya start to speak. So far actually kind of a dialogue going on. Dhaniya speaks, or Dhaniya make a verse, and Buddha giving a kind of an answer. Again Dhaniya makes a verse, the Buddha give a different answer. So likewise, kind of a dialogue going on. And at the end of the situation, actually Daniya and his wife are quite faithful on Buddha, and they want to see who this is, because so far they haven't seen the Buddha. And Daniya and wife, everybody is in their hut, in their dwelling place, but Buddha is in the sky, answering the Daniya's verses. Now they want to come and see who is this person, who is the master, who is telling this kind of spiritual achievement, who is explaining this. Now they have kind of a faith, they want to look at, and now they start to talk. And they are actually talking in praise of the Buddha, in praise of the teaching. Labha vatano anappaka ye mayang bhagavantang addasama saranang tang upema chakkuma sattano hohi tuang mahamuni. Now Daniya and his wife understood, now it is a great gain that we had because of the arrival of the Buddha. Buddha has come to instruct us, Buddha has come to teach us, and he is teaching kind of a deep reality, and it is not a small gain for us. And now we have seen the Blessed One, and now we are going for refuge under the Buddha, and you are the one with the vision, and please be our teacher. Sattano hohi, please be our teacher. Tuang Mahamuni, to us, the great teacher. Now you can imagine what a kind of humble attitude they both had. And on the other hand, they are able to invite the Buddha to become their teacher. So this is a kind of a very interesting human qualities that we can understand here. Even though they are rich people, they are inherited with some very interesting spiritual qualities. And when Buddha teaches, they could recognize their value, they could understand their depth, and they wholeheartedly going refuge under the Buddha. And now they are inviting themselves, please be our teacher. They're very interesting. Sometimes, I mean, people, when they are rich, actually, they become quite conceited. Nobody can approach them. Nobody can teach them. And even when someone wants to advise, they don't even accept those, because they are in a better position. They may be quite rich, having so many luxurious things. So they don't want to listen to anybody. They become quite stubborn, adamant. But here, Daniya and the wife is quite obedient. And they could understand Buddha's teaching, appreciate it, and they want to consider Buddha as their refuge, as their teacher. And though now they are inviting Buddha to become their teacher. And further, they are mentioning, Gopicha ahancha asava brahmacharyang sugate charamase jati maranasya paragu dukkasantakara bhavamase. Gopicha ahancha asava. Now, Dani is mentioning not only himself, even his wife. So, my wife and I both are obediently would like to lead a spiritual life under you. And by doing so, we want to go beyond the birth and death. So, we would like to make an end of suffering. Dukkasantakara bhavamasi. So now the spirituality in both of them have arisen. So they want to lead a spiritual life. They want to practice. Not only that, they both want to become monks. They want to practice under the Buddha. They want to live a celibate life and completely end the suffering. So you can imagine how a kind of a radical change has happened in these two people with Buddha's teaching. So this potential was there, and Buddha understood it. So that is why from very far Buddha approached them and had a kind of a nice involvement to their conversation. And with this, actually, they are quite convinced. This is the teacher. This is a good teaching. We better go under the refuge of the Buddha. And we better become monks under him. And we better consider him as our teacher to end the suffering. So this is very interesting change has happened in these two people. And later actually they both became monks, monk and a nun. And they actually became arahants. And we can cover those things next time. So therefore we can understand how two rich people have gone forth and take refuge on the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, and came to the practice. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
I'm sorry, Bhante. Currently, yeah, there are three questions. Just give me a second. Question number one of three, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, due to multiple reasons, I could not practice walking and sitting during the last 1 year at all. I used to practice daily and participate in retreats before COVID. Now when I try to practice, I don't find any issues with walking. I can establish mindfulness without much effort and continue for 1 hour. When I do sitting, mindfulness on breathing, initially the mind settles while in and out noting is going on. And when it becomes subtle and about to disappear, before establishing mindfulness without the breath, various thoughts float in. I get agitated and thrown back to the gross breath again. This happens again and again throughout the 1 hour. Breath becomes very subtle, I get distracted, and then breathing becomes gross again. It seems like an ideal scenario to observe the underlying cause which topples the calming down process. I know if I keep practicing, this will get fixed based on my past experience. I want to check with Bhante if I should use this opportunity to observe the underlying causes which prevent establishing mindfulness without an object. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Sorry, Chatu, I got left out. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, no problem. So, question number one, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, due to multiple reasons, I could not practice walking and sitting during the last... Bhante is still there. Yep, sorry. I could not practice walking and sitting during the last 1 year at all. I used to practice daily and participate in retreats before COVID. Now when I try to practice, I don't find any issues with walking. I can establish mindfulness without much effort and continue for 1 hour. When I do sitting, mindfulness on breathing, initially the mind settles while in and out noting is going on. And when it becomes subtle and about to disappear, before establishing mindfulness without the breath, various thoughts float in. I get agitated and thrown back to the gross breath again. This happens again and again throughout the 1 hour. Breath becomes very subtle, I get distracted, and breathing becomes gross again. It seems like an ideal scenario to observe the underlying cause which topples the calming down process. I know if I keep practicing, this will get fixed based on my past experience. I want to check with Bhante if I should use this opportunity to observe the underlying causes which prevent establishing mindfulness without an object. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, as you have correctly mentioned, so you can make use of this opportunity to check the underlying tendencies. By the way, in order to do that, you need to have a fair amount of mindfulness and clear comprehension. Otherwise, what happens is, if your mindfulness is weaker, when you are trying to observe the mind, ultimately you become a victim of various emotions, various thoughts, etc. So that is the kind of a disadvantage we have. But on the other hand, if you have a fair amount of mindfulness, strong mindfulness and clear comprehension, then actually you can safely handle the situation. And when you are observing the thought, any emotion, you are in a better position. And your mindfulness is stronger than those defilements, and so they may not grow, and you are not participating into the picture, you are not participating into the dialogue. or you are not promoting the inner chatter. So that is the situation that we need to understand. So therefore, one thing that we need to understand on the other hand is as the breath suffers, so there is a tendency of distraction. Because so far breath is gross. As a result of that, properly mind get established. The consciousness can get easily established because the aramana, the object is quite gross. But as it evolves to become quite subtle, then the breath becomes quite subtle and you can't well establish, you can't even notice it. Then mind starts to wander. So this is a kind of a challenge actually we are facing in the vipassana, in the meditation. And this has to happen like this. And we should not avoid it actually. Avoid in the sense we should allow the breath to become subtler and we should not make it gross. If you are trying to make it gross purposely, then that is completely wrong. You need to allow the breath to evolve so that it becomes subtler and subtler. But at the same time, you need to improve your mindfulness. Because of the weaknesses in our mindfulness, that is why mind start to waver, mind start to shift, distract, because our mindfulness is not sharp enough. In order to be with the subtle breath, it can handle the gross breath, but not yet being able to handle the subtle breath. So that's a kind of a issue that we have. Therefore, you can improve your mindfulness maybe mostly from the walking and try to develop further clear comprehension, further using the walking, so that you are trying to awaken you more and more. Try to develop mindfulness, refine mindfulness more and more. And when you are reaching next time at the subtle breath, then you are in a better position to handle it. So therefore, just take it as a challenge, understand what is really happening, and you can praise yourself, yes, I can handle the gross breath now, but still I am not capable of handling the subtle breath. Let me develop myself. Let me refine my mindfulness, sharpen my mindfulness, so that I can even handle the subtle breath. Later, when you are able to handle it, then the mind may not wander, and you have sharp mindfulness and clear comprehension. And at the same time, that makes you capable of observing even the various tendencies in your mind, various habits in your mind, thoughts in your mind, then you are in a better position. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 3. This one is mindful walking. Venerable Sir, my walking path is about 30 steps and I start focusing on the sensations on the soles of my foot. I can observe sensations such as weight and pressure on the various parts of a sole, the sole, hot, cold nature, and how they vary across the sole. After about 15 to 20 rounds of continuous focus, I start feeling very strong sleepiness. My walking speed slows down and I don't feel the sharp sensations anymore. I feel walking like a drunk man, sleepishly in slow motion, or maybe someone in a coma dragging the feet. The sleepish behavior continues until the bell rings, sometimes very intensely and sometimes in a mild manner. Much merits for your advice. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, and when you actually reach this state, you can stop walking. Just try to stand up, or you can even sit and allow the mind to settle. Because now we are reaching a state where walking is somewhat gross for this experience. The mind is become fairly refined and mind wants to stay concentrated, but without allowing it to further settle, further concentrate, further calms down. If we do walking, then it is not appropriate. So better, once you understand, okay, mind wants to rest now, mind wants to take a kind of peaceful stay, mind wants to become still, then facilitate that. You can simply stand still and you can simply watch how mind is settling. Maybe it is settling to your whole body, maybe started to recognize various phenomena, various sensations throughout the body, or you can comfortably sit and allow the mind to settle. Actually, you don't need to do anything but allow the mind to settle. So then mostly mind may settle, mind may collect through the body, mind may settle into the moment. So likewise, we need to recognize different shifting of our meditation or phase shifting of our meditation, and appropriately we need to behave. So we go to the walking path, and at that time mind was in a little untamed situation, but with the practice, now mind becomes subtle, tamed, and again now is very much like it wants to take a rest. So give the rest, allow it to settle, allow it to concentrate, allow it to very really be with the body. So that would be more appropriate than forcefully driving yourself in the walking.
Question number 3, I think this might be the last one. General question. Dear Bhante, is it true when one is practicing mindfulness regularly and diligently, that time period in meditation becomes a conducive environment to get rid of bad karmic effects? Much merits for your service and for this program with metta. That's the end of the question.
It can be, because in the mindfulness practice, we are having a better position to understand about ourselves, understand various trends, and understand our various emotions, intentions, and we are in a more conducive environment to handle any situation. Now, say for example, there is a kind of a karma that going to give fruit. But now you are quite mindful. And when this particular karma bearing fruits, so you can handle it. You can actually, if it is getting sort of emotional and you are going through some hardships, but you can manage it. So because you are mindful, this kind of a situation is going on. Assume that someone is blaming you. Suppose it is because of past karma. So rather than immediately reacting and spoil the situation, so you can understand, okay, I didn't do that, even though this person is blaming me, shouting, but I didn't do it. But it could be due to some past karma. So now you take that kind of understanding. So without reacting, you can allow the thing to settle. You are now being patient, and you allow the past karma to fade away. So therefore, it is not that just because of mindfulness that the past karma is fading away. Rather, because of mindfulness, we have a better understanding. We know how to handle the situation. We know how to go through hardships. And the hardships may be the representation of bad karma. And we are managing it. We are somehow going through it without accumulating new karma. So especially as you progress in Satipatthana, that is one of the understanding that one may go through. So you are coming through a mechanism how to avoid generating new karma. Say for example in Chittanupassana, say if there is a thought of anger coming to your mind. Typically what happens is, so we promote it, we start to think that I am correct, he is wrong. We promote this kind of anger in our mind. Then ultimately we start shouting, we start quarreling, arguing, and all sorts of things. So then we accumulate karma. But on the other hand, suppose when you are becoming more and more mindful, anger may arise. Still the anger might arise in your mind, but you recognize it. You are not promoting it now, but it is now under check, under the supervision of the mindfulness. Now it can't grow abruptly, it can't grow overwhelming you, overpowering you, so it may start to fade away. So now you are not immediately reacting, you are not emotionally reacting. So the possibility of arousing newcomer, generating newcomer is you are nullifying, you are cancelling. So therefore, one is understanding this kind of a mechanism, how to prevent newcomer being generated. And again, you are not unnecessarily getting involved, even to any kind of a situation. You are participating on invitation. You are participating, understanding that you are the one which is required to do it. Otherwise, you simply mind your own business. You are not getting involved unnecessarily. You are not putting your hand. So likewise, you are maintaining kind of a safe approach without unnecessarily getting entangled, involved, but simply maintaining a mindful approach. So therefore, we can say, as the development of Satipatthana, that you are recognizing a new way of living, which is more comfortable and more mindful, and with some least friction. Yeah.
I don't think there's any more questions. There's a response. I think it's to that question. It says, Bhante, could the restlessness be a result of karma?
Can be. It also can be. Because, I mean, when we had done something which is causing restlessness to another person, so probably we also might have the repercussions, consequences because of that. So most of the unwholesome thoughts, unwholesome mental states rising in our mind could be due to past karma. But the thing is, we can't properly definitely say that, because it is beyond our capacity. I mean, the restlessness could be because of some climatic problems, because of some social problems, because of some this karmic issues. So it can happen due to various reasons. So we don't have the capacity to precisely recognize, okay, this is exactly because of this particular reason. You can give some close guess, but you can't precisely mention that. So that is the issue that we have. So anyway, restlessness also can happen due to karma.
We don't have any more questions, Bhante, but what we might do is we'll just ask if anyone's got any questions. We'll give you about a minute if you want to just raise your hand and we can unmute you. This might be a really good opportunity if you want to ask some questions directly to Bhante.
Yeah.
Discussion. Even though Bhante is not here, we'd like to pass on our merits and thanks for giving up valuable time and helping us on with our Dhamma journey. And secondly, to the people working behind the scenes, seen and unseen, to help with this program. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, we couldn't continue. So with that, I would like to wind up the program. Thank you, Sarai.